What are the challenges facing Generation X in saving for retirement, and why are Gen Xers being compared to Jan Brady along the way? We cover that and more coming up on today's show.
Welcome in to Your Retirement with Sam Dunes.
Welcome to Your Retirement. I'm Chuck Caton, and for Dual Financial Strategies, we have Sam Dual and Luke Van Abel in studio this week. And you know the folks at Dual Financial Strategies. They have offices in the Fox Valley, both in Appleton and in Green Bay, and they are famous for the retirement lifestyle review that they can provide to you through no cost, no obligation when you give them a call at 866-203-7486. Now, I've heard of Tom Brady, Sam, but I have not heard of Jan Brady because I didn't watch a lot of television. I was playing sports back when the Brady Bunch was being aired. I can't even tell you what network it was on. But Generation X, as you so succinctly put before the break, has been compared to Jan Brady in regards to retirement savings on social media, which didn't exist when the Brady Bunch was being aired. So it seems to be a likeness that has resonated with a lot of people. So maybe you, as a person who is not a Generation Xer, but is fairly close, maybe can answer that question.
Yeah. You know, the oldest portion of Gen X right now, they're starting to turn 59 and a half this month. And the magic of that number is that that is the earliest age when a worker can start withdrawing money from a retirement asset without a penalty. So if you're taking it from a Roth IRA, you're taking it from a regular IRA, whatever you're taking it from, you can start taking it out of there. The internet has been calling Gen X the Jan Brady of generations, as a lot of the talk has been centered around their generational Marsha Brady, and left them in a large shadow cast by their generational sibling. So it's like they're kind of the in-between generation, I guess, that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. You know, everybody hears about millennials and you hear about the baby boomers. Gen X is kind of that in the shadow generation, and it has created a pretty big gap for them, both in their ability to save efficiently, but to save enough to last them through retirement. And that's the big thing that we are seeing with that generation, is that they're starting to creep up on retirement at this point in time. And we'll talk today about some of the trends that we're seeing there.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because, Luke, when we talk about that middle child compared to baby boomers and millennials, generational siblings, there is probably a large difference between the way they save. Now, I'm a baby boomer right in the beginning of the baby boomer, or about 5 years in to what was called the baby boom generation, being a person who was born in the early 50s. But and then we're, of course, talking about people of the next generation. I guess saving, is it less contagious, so to speak, with the Gen Xers? Do they save less money? Is it because of inflation? What's the reason here that we're looking at such a gap between, say, the baby boomers and millennials and Gen Xers?
Yeah, we are seeing that, you know, this generation is far from prepared. Nearly half of them are saying that it would take a miracle for them to be able to retire, according to a recent study. So this is leaving many Gen Xers on their own in planning for retirement, and incredibly unprepared, you know, both in the amount of assets they have and in the level of knowledge and understanding when it comes to some of the key disciplines of, you know, financial matters related to retirement. So I think the really important part is that I don't know if this is like an every other generation thing where maybe one generation tends to be really good with money and then the next generation isn't as good. I don't know if that plays a part in it, but either way, we're seeing some lag from a good number of people. So now's the time to educate yourself. Now's the time to be proactive in learning these things that maybe you're not aware of, so that you can ultimately retire when you want to.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing you just brought up, Luke, because being a baby boomer and being a product of the Depression generation, our, you know, the greatest generation, arguably, who were the World War II veterans, as my father was, and people who grew up basically in the 30s and 40s in their youth, they learned to save, but the economy was a little bit different than that. You didn't make a lot of money. If you made $20,000 a year, you were rich mm-hmm. back in the late 50s and early 60s. But when we talk about things like saving today, it's becoming increasingly difficult, isn't it? Because, Sam, the average retirement, and this is what boggles my mind with Gen Xers, they're having the same, probably the same difficulty saving lots of money as maybe my father and mother's generation, even though they probably don't have any excuses, right? Because it says the Gen X household retirement savings right now, and we've got to keep in mind that they're in their 50s, is about $150,000. And that's on the low side. It's shocking, actually, especially if you don't have a lot of time to try to catch up, right, Sam?
Yeah, it is. And we were discussing before the show that in the office, we are seeing Gen Xers coming in. I mean, we're seeing people coming in that are in their early 50s, 52, 53, 54, with solid plans to retire in their mid to late 50s. And it seems to be, I don't even know the right word for it. I don't know how to describe it. But I believe that it is as much, I don't believe it's an inability to save. I don't know that Gen Xers have been any more of a consuming generation than anybody else has. Maybe slightly. It's, you know, it's interesting from a parental perspective, because Chuck, you and I were talking before the show, and with the difference in our ages, your children are Gen Xers. Mine are not. Mine are millennials, because I'm 10 years younger than you are. So mm-hmm. I believe, from what I can see and just looking at it from a societal perspective, I believe that it is more of an influential parental influence factor that is getting these kids to save, or I guess they're not kids, but younger people to save or not. Because the people that we see that are Gen Xers that are coming in, their parents were savers. Their parents have money. Their parents are retired. You know, so I think sometimes we discount or don't realize the influence of family, the influence of people around us on the outside, how that affects us later on in life, because we find that in most cases, Gen Xers, a lot of them that we have met that don't have any money, their family didn't have any money and they were never taught to save. They were never given that savings bug. On the flip side of the coin, you know, we can look at other folks that are Gen Xers. As a matter of fact, I was just on the phone last week with one of my clients, and we were talking about all of his children have done very, very well, very successful in different areas. And it's not because they came from a trust fund. They are not trust fund babies. He's done very well. Him and his wife have been diligent savers, but they taught them the habit of savings. They taught them the benefit of savings, and they taught them the habits and benefits of delayed gratification, to where you don't have to have everything right now, that you wait and you save and you do things that you can afford to do. So I think it's twofold. I think it's maybe a generation that, you know, as we were kind of equating it to the Brady Bunch there, where they've grown up in their older sibling shadow. So maybe there's been some sort of a compensation for that by more gratification with money. So they've been more spenders than they are savers. But I do believe that we could probably look back at that from a societal and a psychological perspective and realize that I think that this problem has manifested itself merely because of what they have been taught and what they have been influenced by, more than situational, because they certainly are making more money than their parents ever made. They're making more money than a lot of generations have made. They're doing very, very well from a financial perspective. Problem is, they're saving it and not spending it. Are spending them. They're spending it, not saving it.
Yeah, and we got some statistics here, Luke, that kind of manifest what he is saying, what Sam is saying from Schroeder's. This, you know, the average for a Gen Xer safe for retirement is a little over $660,000, and that's about half of what they'll probably need. So I want to know from you, how do they catch up, and where do you figure people should invest as we wrap this segment up? To max out their 401ks if they have one, or how do they save if it's getting late for them?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you brought up the retirement tools. So 401k, one of the number one savings vehicles for retirees. So, you know, if you're not already maximizing that in 2024, you can contribute $23,000 of your own dollars. Once you go over the age of 50, you can put another $7,500 in. So that's a total of $30,500. Maybe you're putting 10 grand in, whatever that is. Maybe it's 15. Well, you can definitely increase those contributions to the retirement accounts. I think of business owners. Sam and I have a number of clients that own their own business. Maybe you own your own business as a radio listener. A lot of times we, as a business owners, dump a lot of money back into our business to grow the business. There's some phenomenal tools out there for investing, for saving in taxes that have limits up to like $69,000. So if you fall into that category where you're a business owner, take advantage of those opportunities. And next, after you've started looking at, you know, contributing to the 401k, maybe you say, hey, I've got some extra money. Maybe I want to, you know, I've got the match money. I've gotten the match money in my pre-tax accounts, but really I'm concerned about taxes. I'd like to go somewhere where I'm not going to have tax implications in the future. You can also contribute while you're contributing to a 401k to your own IRA. And maybe you're, you know, intrigued by a Roth IRA or something like that with limits up to $8,000 a year. Then once you start maximizing those, there's brokerage accounts. Those are what they call non-retirement accounts. And there is no limit to the amount of money that you can put into there. Pretty tax advantaged too. They're taxed differently than our IRAs are and our 401ks. But if you're smart with that, you can do that pretty responsibly from a tax perspective. So there's a variety of different tools that can be done if you need to play catch up.
All right, and that's why you should call Dual Financial Strategies. If you're in that Gen X predicament here, you're close to retirement, and you want to do the best you can for your retirement in the future, get that retirement lifestyle review from Sam and Luke at Dual Financial Strategies by calling simply 866-203-7486. You'll get a no-cost, no-obligation sit-down with them at either their Appleton office or the one in Green Bay, and let them show you how it's never too late to save for retirement if you do the right things. Once again, it's 866-203-7486. Dual Financial Strategies, because it is your retirement. What's coming up next, Sam?
When we come back, we're going to cover a few realities about the world of investing that you might not have heard about and why they're so important to gauging where you are on your own retirement savings journey. Stay tuned.
We're back here on Your Retirement. I'm Chuck Caton, sitting in along with Luke Van Abelt and Sam Duell of Duell Financial Strategies. They have about a quarter of a century of experience in dealing with you here in the Fox Valley and your retirement needs. They are fiduciaries, which means you come first to them about your retirement. They've got an office in Green Bay, one in Appleton. And again, if you missed that phone number before the break, it's 866-203-7486. And you'll get that retirement lifestyle review. All right, we're switching gears here, Sam, and we're going to start talking about my generation now and yours. You're one of the last of the boomers.
Yep.
And I don't mean Chris Berman of ESPN, but we are talking, and I'm one of the kind of the middle range boomer, being, as Sam divulged earlier, that I'm 10 years older than Mr. Duell. And so you can figure that out. I'm almost Richard Michael Daniel territory, if you know what I mean. pretty soon, in another year or so, that old RMD. Yeah, that's right. But it says the market here has been blessing older Americans saving for retirement of late. Do you agree with this here? Contrary to a lot of the headlines of the forecast, we talked about how we save, but let's dive into what the market does for millions of Americans. We've kind of ridden the wave here of the last, like, maybe 4, 5, 6 years.
Yeah, it's generationally the people that are a little bit older, they're in the market to some extent, many of them with quite a significant part of their assets, and they did take some significant hits in 2022, but they should be well past even from that event, and there were good market years before that. So we are seeing the bottom line of retirement nest eggs being bolstered, and those are being pushed back up again. We're seeing indications that people are running with surpluses, where they're running a surplus of the money that they're going to need. On average, I think it's about 27%, but that's pretty substantial for people where they're pushing that much of a surplus into the retirement savings account. There are still some gaps that exist out there, but the outlook for retirement, we believe, with what we've been seeing from the market, certainly the economy hasn't helped any, but what we're seeing from the market, that has improved the outlook for a substantial portion of retirement savers. I would say probably all but the bottom quartile of wage earners, but that's also, that's a little bit disingenuous when it gets put that way, because the bottom quartile of wage earners obviously are simply not saving as much for retirement because they just can't from an economic perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting, because it says from Vanguard, there's a little data that says that retirement preparedness for baby boomers indicates that a lot of those higher income earners have grown their retirement savings substantially. That's what you've said. But there still is a gap, others of a younger age. As you mentioned, all but for the bottom quartile of wage earners. But Luke, why is that? And how can people really boost their retirement savings here? Let's talk about some of those tools that we may have touched on just before the break. Because, if you're going to use the market, that's one tool. But there are others, I'm sure.
Yes. I mean, we talked in the last segment about increasing contributions. That's the first line of defense, because you have control over that. While it might not be fun to pull back spending, increasing those contributions while you still have earned income, is a phenomenal way to do that. Then we start to look at, how do we bolster returns? Where can we go for gains? The nice thing about the stock market over time is that it can produce some nice gains to grow your money, in addition to, of course, the money that you're putting in there. But the thing we have to be careful with, Chuck, especially for our audience, for those people that are in retirement, near retirement, when we're talking about gains, is let's ensure that we have the proper risk capacity and tolerance first. Because I think too often, yes, we want to hit that nice triple, we want to hit a home run when it comes to returns, but we also, how concerned are you about the market sort of doing a sidestep or stepping backwards a few paces, especially as you near the finish line here? So taking a closer look at your risk capacity, using a tool like RiskWise, which is right on our website, families go through, can help you assess what is your risk speed, what is your comfort level with risk, because we don't want to just chase after those returns at this stage of the game and then get slapped and have that negatively impact when you can retire and how you can retire.
Okay, let's talk statistics again. Once again, the stock market gains have helped boost retirement savings for most, but widened the gap between upper income workers and in the bottom 25% of wage earners. Now, there is that savings gap, 36% of their SSR, which is sustainable replacement rate, and their expected spending needs. Now, it's a large gap here, Sam, and we talk about these different tools for folks. You want guaranteed income in retirement, I'm sure, but it's still a large gap. So why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's probably, part of it has to do with participation in the market. Are they in the market as much as the other ones are, or why exactly is that? It's hard to say. Obviously, if you're a higher wage earner, you're going to be able to put more into your 401ks or your IRAs. So you're going to be able to put more of it away. And then because you have more of it put away, it's no different than the old compounding interest effect, right? I mean, the more money that you have in there, the more it's going to compound. But you will see the gap get exponentially larger simply because of the mathematics involved in it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got that data indicating that people who are, you know, riding the waves of the market that way, or the performance of the S&P 500. But Luke, what does the data indicate in terms of how many folks can really save for retirement once they're in that financial red zone? Can you make a correlation between what they've done over the last few years? And if they're in that red zone, which we define as maybe 5 to 7 years, maybe you have a different definition of that, before retirement, I think it's different for everybody because that's what this show's all about, your retirement. But does this indicate maybe success or failure in that red zone if you're not saving properly?
Yeah, so I mean, we typically define the red zone as 3 to 5 years prior to, you know, your anticipated retirement date. But if we're talking about, you know, S&P, the growth in the market, you know, we're talking about the positive gains that have been coming from the market recently. And among those, you know, 55 years of age and older, the value of their equity and mutual funds are up $5.5 trillion in the past year alone. So there's some significant gains there. And if we go back to the first quarter of 2020, they've seen almost $17 trillion in gains. So, you know, this is proving favorable for those people that are getting close to retirement right now because we've had this run up in gains. The challenge is we never know from a retirement standpoint. There's also a risk called sequence of return risk that states that, you know, depending on what happens with market returns leading up to retirement, shortly after you retire, has a big impact on your overall success. Of course, we don't get to know that ahead of time, but we've got to factor that in, that we might not always have these nice gains pushing the headwinds of our retirement.
Yeah, it's all about timing, and we're not talking about timing the market, but timing your when you want to retire and trying to ride that positive wave rather than see what happened in 07 and 08 when people had to hang it up or wanted to and then lost, what, 30 to 40%. So it seems like, at least for now, as Luke just said, people investing for retirement right now, they have a little bit more hope, I think, in the future. But that hope can even be bolstered, Sam, by people coming to visit you and what you at Dual Financial Strategies can do for them.
Well, I think it comes down to just a realistic conversation. Where are you at now? Where do you want to be? How do we plot that path from point A to point B? You know, there are no miracles. There is no magic cure. There's not a, you know, there's not the magic beanstalk that goes straight up to retirement, you know, retirement nirvana or anything like that. It's diligence and it's patience and it's lots of hard work and planning. But it all starts with a phone call. If we're serious with you, we're going to ask that you be serious with us. We are going to take this very seriously. We're going to talk with you. We're going to uncover what you're trying to achieve, what are your hopes, your goals, your fears. But we can start this journey together, and then we can go on the journey with you. That's what we've done, folks, for 24 years. Work with people that are either 3 to 5 years from retirement or already in retirement. They're looking for a plan. They're looking for guidance. They're looking for an advisory firm that has their back, that's not just going to try to stuff them full of a bunch of A-share mutual funds and collect their commission and never hear from them again. Not going to try to jam you into some variable annuity with god-awful fees inside of it. We're going to work with you as a person and as a family and talk about all of the things and do all of the things that all of the other advisors either choose not to do or just don't know to do. So we want you to give us a call. We want to meet you. We appreciate you tuning in on the weekends. But let's start that active conversation right now. And let's see what Dual Financial Strategies could do to help you get on the path to your retirement.
And it's very simple to do it. As Sam just said, it takes you to be proactive, to pick up that phone and call 866-203-7486. They have an office in Appleton, one in Green Bay, so lots of good service for you from Dual Financial Strategies here in the Fox Valley. Again, it's 866-203-7486. Have a sit down with Sam, Andy, or Luke, and they will discuss, no cost, no obligation, just to sit and get to know your situation, because it's all about your retirement, not your neighbor's, not your relative's retirement. And they'll give you that personalized retirement lifestyle review. Once again, it's 866-203-7486. That's the number to call to reach Sam, Andy, or Luke at Dual Financial Strategies as you prepare for the business of retirement. We've got to take another break, Sam, but what's coming up in the next segment?
Well, Chuck, when we come back, we're going to talk about where folks should go for financial insight. We get that question so very, very often, and we've got a few tips for you to get you started with the help of a financial professional. Where can folks start? All that when we come back.
And we are back now here on Your Retirement. I'm Chuck Caton, sitting in along with Sam Duell and Luke Van Abel, as Andy Schooler is on assignment this week for Duell Financial Strategies, where they give you that retirement lifestyle review. All you have to do is make that no-cost, no-obligation phone call to sit down for an appointment, either at their Green Bay office or the one in Appleton at 866-203-7486. That's 866-203-7486. Well, as Sam said before the break, we're going to talk about some financial insight. Where do you go to find it? So where should folks go for financial insight? Sam, we've got some tips between you and Luke to get people started with the help of a financial professional, as both of you are. So where do folks start? I guess square one, this seems very obvious. You need to start paying off some high interest debt, because that can drag you down when you're trying to pay yourself in retirement.
You got to look at debt first and foremost. You need to look at debt before you look at savings, because what debt do you have? Folks, there's good debt, there's bad debt, and there is, I guess, neutral debt. So what would good debt be? Well, good debt would be if it's an income-generating debt. You own a property, and you have debt, you have a mortgage against it, you have a note against it, you're making payments, but it's generating a positive cash flow for you. You're getting more into your pocket than what's going out of your pocket to service that debt. That's good debt. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Most commercial real estate is built on debt like that. Then there is bad debt. What's bad debt? American Express is bad debt. Citicard Visa is bad debt. That is horrific, nasty. You should never, ever get involved in that grotesquely bad debt. I mean, it always amazes me that you see the politicians and people get all puffed up and talking about the payday loans and all of that sort of stuff, and they're just going to basically shut down everybody on the face of the planet. But the debt that these charge card companies, or that the interest these charge card companies pay, is obscene. It's grotesque, the amount of interest that they charge. That's the first place I would tell you to start. If you have charge card debt, get rid of it. Whatever you have to do, get rid of it. I mean, you're sitting out there paying 28% on that. Folks, you won't pay that off in your entire lifetime. It's literally mathematically impossible, making minimum payments, to ever pay that debt off. And unfortunately, many of you are in that spot. We know that statistically about 13% of you will hide that debt from a loved one, and another 7% of you just ignore it and act like it's not even there.
Really?
There's a reason why these charge card companies have these temples to themselves as far as buildings. You're building them for them. And that's the problem, is that the people that can least afford to finance the charge card companies are the ones that are financing them. People that manage their debt, I mean, I use charge cards. Luke uses charge cards. Our businesses use charge cards. I don't pay anybody any interest. Mm-hmm. It's like I use their money for 28 to 30 days, and then I will give them my money.
And we get incentives back.
And we get incentives back. I get rewards. It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, we'll get back $2,000 to $4,000 a year in cash back rewards on business credit cards.
But if you've got a problem with the debt, then you've got no business using it.
You shouldn't have it.
And don't justify it by saying, hey, I'm going to get some travel rewards or something like that. Nope, you've got a problem. Pay it off. Yeah. Get it done.
Yeah, you just got a $1,000 vacation and it only cost you $8,000 in interest. And people will fool themselves like that. So in some cases, it could make sense to slow down debt payoff to save more. But basically what you're looking at here, folks, is it good debt or is it bad debt? If I'm putting this money into savings, will I make more on it in savings than what it is costing me in interest? That's about the only time. We get this question a lot. You'll come in and say, should I pay off my mortgage when I go into retirement? We say, well, what's your interest rate? And you say it's 2.67%. We say, well, you just bought a 5% CD. What do you think? Should you pay the bank 2.67% to pay that loan off? Or should you take that same money, put it into your own pocket, let them pay you 5%? That's called leverage. It's positive leverage when you do that. Mm-hmm. So you got to have your, you know, you got to have your emergency funds and things like that. But get rid of that high interest debt and do not allow them to be sucking this money out of your pocket, because that is the single biggest detriment to retirement, is having substantial bad high interest debt. You'll never dig yourself out of that hole. And as the old saying goes, at some point in time, you're like, how do I get out of the hole? Well, the first way to get out of the hole is to stop digging.
Yeah. We're talking to Sam Dula and Luke Van Abel about getting some tips from a financial professional, a retirement professional, as they are, on how you set yourself up for retirement. And one of the things, Luke, is to focus on your future. It's nice to talk about the now, but you have to be looking ahead. That's what any successful person does.
Right. And you have to ask yourself, where do you want to be in the future? Where do you want to be 10 years from now, 15 years from now? How long is it till retirement? What do you want that to look like? Do you want to be in the driver's seat? Do you want to be in control of when you go? Or do you want to be, you know, working for a long, long time? And, you know, there's some interesting, you know, stats that over half of Americans, 57% to be precise, are wary about investing in the stock market yet, and, you know, wary about the future of the market, taking on too much risk. And I know we talked about this. I talked about this earlier in the segment, but Sam and I see people all the time. They come in, they've completed our risk assessment, and they don't know what their appetite for risk is. They don't know what the risk profile is of their current investments. They think that it's lined up. They kind of hope that it's lined up. But folks, if you don't know, if you haven't taken a risk assessment in a while, now's the time to do that. And now is also the time to understand, how are your assets positioned? Are those positioned near what your comfort level is for risk? Or, like we see all too often, is there a great divide, a great difference between those? Because until you have those facts, that's a really powerful place to start. After that, we can start talking about the tools. We can talk about what's going to be used. But we need to talk about the goals first. What are you trying to accomplish? What needs to be done to get there? And let's take the least amount of risk possible to accomplish your goal.
Yeah,
and
I think
to that point, Luke, the other thing that we notice is that people have a tendency, and this is just human nature, but people have a tendency to examine their own individual accounts, usually 401ks or even brokers' accounts. Mm-hmm. They look at them in a vacuum, because we hear that all the time. Hey, it's doing really well.
Yeah.
Doing really well. And then what you have to do there is, everything does really well within the context of itself. If all you're comparing it to is itself, it's like, you know, my God, I'm a phenomenal golfer when I'm out in my garage hitting them into my net off of my but put me on a real golf course with somebody who actually knows what they're doing, and the deficiencies kind of start to show up a little bit.
Sure.
So along with that riskalyze, where you start to determine what your risk analysis is, the other thing that you're looking at there is, how is this position that I have doing really relative to how it should be? Because there's always a comparative benchmark there,
right?
So that, I think that's important too,
because it is,
especially in times like now where the markets are pretty good. People are pretty happy because they're like, hey, things are going up. But are you going to be happy to find out that the way things are going up, that you're actually going up 20% at a rate 20% less than what you should be, or that your advisor has you positioned in a way that you're not even remotely getting all of the gains that you should be getting. So it's there's so many nuances.
Or you're getting that 20% gain, but you're taking an obscene amount of risk to get it.
Exactly.
Whereas you could take way less risk and get a similar rate of return.
And examine and get the exact same thing. That's why we like to try to lay all of those myths aside that people think that, in order to make more money, I've got to take more risk. And that is just, we can illustrate for you within Risk Eliza that is categorically untrue.
Let's talk about that as we wrap this segment up, knowing and being comfortable with your investments, Sam, and how you can help to do that.
Well, that's what it's all about, is that we help you know what you actually have. The first thing that we feel like we help you do is to get to know yourself in reality, because there's a lot of puffery that goes on in this whole financial business. There's a lot of puffery that goes on in this whole risk analysis, because most people, it seems to be more of a male thing. Maybe it's just a guy deal, but they seem to think that they can handle a whole lot more risk than they can until they actually start getting slapped in the face. And then they find out that they weren't nearly as risk averse as they thought they were. But let's find out. Let's find out now. Let's run some Riskalyze analysis and find out what your guardrails are. Let's find out what your parameters are. Let's find out what your risk reward ratio really is. Not what you wish it could be because of the way that your buddy at work talks, but what's real for you. We want you comfortable with what you're doing. We want you comfortable with your plan. And above all else, we want you comfortable with your retirement.
And it's very simple to do that. All you have to do is make that no cost, no obligation phone call to Dual Financial Strategies and talk with Sam, Andy, or Luke at 866-203-7486. That's 866-203-7486. And you'll get that retirement lifestyle review that you've been looking for, whether you visit them at the Appleton office or one in Green Bay. They're here to serve you here in the Fox Valley with over a quarter of a century of experience helping people like you to and through retirement, because it's all about your retirement. It's custom designed for you and your desires and all of your dreams of what you want to do when you enjoy your post-employment career. And remember that also Sam has the third printing of Purpose Determines Placement. That's the book he wrote, and he will explain that to you as well, because there's got to always be a purpose for where you put your retirement funds. So give him a call, 866-203-7486. That's 866-203-7486, and get that retirement lifestyle review. No cost, no obligation, by the way, to sit down and have that meeting with Sam, Andy, or Luke. Well, a fast-moving show once again, but we've got one more segment.
We do, and it's a segment that everybody always looks forward to. You've got questions, we've got some answers, right after this.
All right, we're back here on Your Retirement. I'm Chuck Caton with Sam Dual, Luke Van Abel of Dual Financial Strategies. It is that question and answer period again. And in case you missed the phone number to get that no cost, no obligation, sit down with him. It's 866-203-7486. And I think you're ready to go. We miss Andy this week with the segment, but Sam and Luke, you're ready to go, aren't you?
Yep. Gives us an even number of questions, so we're good.
All right, we've got Melly in Greenville here that wants to know, does it count against my RMD if I start withdrawing from my 401k before the age of 72 or 73? Do I have to claim that as a required minimum distribution?
Well, it doesn't count against anything, Melly. So at 72 or 73, depending upon what your age is right now, the calculation will be made every year as to what your required distribution is. That's a static number. It's a life expectancy dividing factor. And what they do for those is they will look at the value of a qualified retirement account, like an IRA, a 401k, 403b, whatever the case might be. They will look at that on December the 31st of the preceding year. So let's say that we're in year 2024 right now. In order to determine how much your required minimum distribution would be at 72 or 73, we would have looked at what the value of your IRA was on 12/31 of 2023. Then you use the math, do the dividing factor on that, and that'll tell us how much the required minimum distribution is. So if you're starting to take withdrawals, let's say you started taking withdrawals out when you were 60 years old. Well, obviously, you're probably spending down the value of that account unless you're making more than what you're spending. So it's going to probably impact that. But at 72 or 73, you are still required. You're still under the mantle of required minimum distributions. However, it's not in addition to. It's not like you have to take so much and then take so much more. So let's say your required distribution was $30,000, just for the sake of argument. And let's say that you're taking out $35,000. Well, you've met your required minimum distribution. You don't have to take out any more. You can always take more than the required minimum distribution. You just can't take any less without penalty. So in answer to your question, if you're already withdrawing from that account, and as long as that is meeting what the required minimum distribution is, when you hit 72 or 73, you're fine. But let's say your required distribution was $35,000 and you've only been taking out $30,000. Well, yeah, then you're going to have to up it to meet the required. And the key word in that three letters there, Chuck, is minimum, the required minimum distribution. So if you're already taking 35, the required distribution is only 30, you're good to go. But if you're only taking 30 and the required distribution is 35, you're going to have to increase that distribution by $5,000 to meet your minimums.
Okay, here's an ancillary question for you now. Somebody's turning 73 July 1st of this year.
Yes.
Okay, and they had a rollover, or they converted the remainder of their IRA prior to their birthday into that year, so they would have no RMD the next year, right?
You mean they converted it like into a Roth? Or
Converted into a Roth, I'm sorry, yeah. And they did it in January of 2024. They will have no RMD, even though you said if there was a balance as of December of 2023, that gets wiped out as long as you don't have anything by December of 2024, the year you turned 73.
Correct. And the conversion that they did was no different than taking a distribution out of it, because instead of taking the money and putting it into their pocket, they just took the money and moved it over to a Roth.
And they're taxable. So, yeah.
And therein lies the rub. I mean, the bottom line of this is that the only reason why there's a required minimum distribution is not because the government's worried about you getting your 30 grand. They're worried about getting paid on their 30 grand.
That's right.
So they don't care how you do it.
But what if it's been reported by the custodian that they sent that figure to the IRS?
Well, the custodian will send out, and you'll start to notice, folks, when you get towards that age, a lot of you'll start getting them now. You'll get what's called a form 5498, and that usually comes somewhere between February and May for most people. But that will tell you what the fair market value of your IRA was. That's what you use for calculating your required distribution. So it doesn't matter what the IRS reported, or doesn't matter what the employer reported to the IRS. All that matters is that on the tax return that year, you're going to show that you did a conversion of your IRA into a Roth with the appropriate amount of taxes. That's all the IRS is looking at.
There you go.
Was that amount of money moved into a taxable scenario?
Okay, very good. Thank you for that answer, because that's applicable to a lot of people that we know.
A lot of people don't understand.
Yeah.
It's frustratingly complex and simple at the same time.
Exactly. And I still don't understand why they would report it to the IRS, but then it gets wiped out if you've converted the whole thing that next year before that person turns 73.
Because there's a lot of folks sitting in pods at the IRS need something to do and more paper to push. That's why.
I guess so. Jeremy in Green Bay. Luke wants to know, my wife wants me to work till I'm 60 or more. Now, I've shown the calculations and she still doesn't think we'd have enough money to retire. I wonder if anybody else has this problem. If so, how do you convince your significant other that retirement is possible? Now you're going to have to be a counselor here, Luke.
That's what I was thinking, Chuck. You know, Jeremy, I think you're putting me in a real sticky spot here.
You don't even have a degree.
You're right. I don't even have a degree in counseling.
You played a doctor on the radio once, so I think you can answer it.
But I guess I'm married, so been married 19 years this year, so I've got a little experience there. So I've been there, Jeremy.
So you're institutionalized.
Yeah. I think we've experienced this, my wife and I, where, you know, I might be trying to provide some insight to her on something, and she doesn't see it. But then when she hears it from somebody else, it, you know, hits a little bit closer to home, and vice versa. I mean, the same thing has happened where she's trying to convince me of something. And I don't know if it's a man's brains versus woman's brains thing and just the language we use. But I think the overall lesson here is that, you know, a lot of times having a second opinion, you know, the perceived expertise of the person giving the advice might help your wife. So if, you know, a second opinion could be really important, a retirement lifestyle review where you just, you come in, you share your goals, you share, you know, what you have, and then let somebody who does this day in and day out talk to her. And then, you know, she hears it from you and she hears it from a financial professional. Most likely she's going to then, you know, be on board with that. And then maybe you get to retire a little bit sooner than what you, what she thought would be the best path for you.
All right, Terry's in Appleton, and Sam, she says, I'm in my early 60s. I've got no time to let my 401k bounce back if it tanks. So I'm pretty nervous about what would happen to my retirement if we went into a recession. So is it a decent idea to pull it all out? The way I see it, it's better to lose some potential growth than lose a whole lot more.
Yeah, it's valid, Terry. I mean, because we get so many people in our office your age, that fear factor does start to come in. And you're absolutely right. You're 100% correct. You don't have time. You and I are both the same age, and we do not have the blessing of time anymore. So, yes, we start to get fearful of things because we don't have the time for it to go back. Is it a decent idea to pull it all out? You are at a point where you can make some changes to the structure of your 401k. There is a special scenario within within qualified plans called a non-hardship in-service distribution. You can move it out of your 401k and move it into your own private individual retirement account. That's a rollover. It doesn't affect your 401k. You still get to put money in your 401k as long as you work. You still get your company matches. None of that changes. But you can start to design your retirement plan now by virtue of the in-service distribution. So we could move it out of the 401k and not just pull it out and basically put it in your sock drawer, but start to restructure it. Maybe we start putting some laddering of interest, you know, interest-bearing instruments inside of it. Maybe we start to spread you out into different areas in the stock market. Maybe we start to use some guaranteed fixed interest annuities, or maybe some fixed indexed annuities. If you want access to the market, you want to still make gains that are related to stock market gains, but you want to eliminate the risk and not have to ride through a downward pull down again, that's a great instrument for that. I own those myself. I've owned them for many years. I use that in a part of my portfolio that I want to have protected from volatility and protected from trying to get my money back. I have a saying, Terry, and I've always said that I'd rather be looking at it than looking for it. So give us a call. Let's look at where you're at right now, and let's see where we could get you restructured to get you comfortable with where you're at, because I don't want you to pull it out and put it in your sock drawer, because that is a zero net sum gain, and it's a losing proposition because inflation will eat you up. But we can get you to a position with our years of experience in retirement so that you're much more comfortable with what you're doing.
Okay, we only got about 30 or 40 seconds here. Luke, here's a quick one here. Can you explain to me, like I'm a 7-year-old, Glenn in De Pere wants to know about what a 401k or a pension is.
Hi, Glenn. Yeah, so 401k pensions, those are qualified retirement accounts. So that just means that any distribution that comes from them is going to be taxable. They're both employer accounts, so they are established with an employer. And when you're retired, you know, many decisions have to be made around this. So if the distributions are all taxable, then the more money that's coming from there, the more money in that 401k basket, the bigger the impact on taxes. You've kicked the tax can down the road, and those taxes are going to come due. Uncle Sam's going to force you to take them out. So planning for this in conjunction with your retirement plan is crucial to ensuring that you keep as much of that money as possible.
And this is why you've got to give Sam or Luke a call at Dual Financial Strategies, because they can give you all that fine advice about your 401k, about rolling things over, about converting to a Roth, and all the things that we just spoke of with some of the questions here, all part and parcel of a retirement lifestyle review that they will give to you, complimentary to sit down with you and discuss your retirement, because it's all about your individual retirement. It's not about your neighbors, not about a relative's. It's all about yours. 866-203-7486 is the number. That's 866-203-7486. 7486. You can make an appointment in Appleton or one in Green Bay, because Dual Financial Strategies has offices in both those fine cities. Once again, 866-203-7486 is the number. And remember that they've got over a quarter of a century of experience helping people to the Fox Valley just like you to and through your retirement. Sam, it's been a great show. Your final thoughts?
Appreciate everybody tuning in. Catch us on TV this weekend and catch us right here same time next week.
Investment advisory services offered through Dual Financial Strategies, LLC, a Wisconsin registered investment advisor. Dual Financial Strategies does not provide legal or tax advice. Investment advisor representatives of Dual Financial Strategies may only conduct business with residents of the states and jurisdictions in which they are properly registered. Insurance and annuity products are sold through Dual Financial Strategies.